And now it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. Uncle Dennis here at the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to invite you to pick up a pencil and some paper so that you can write down names, addresses, telephone numbers, web pages, email addresses, anything you need to know to take action. And today is the 23rd of June, 2016. Let's start off with announcements. The Earth First Round River Rendezvous is next week. Actually, starting on the June 29th and running through July 7th, this year's event will take place in the Manistee National Forest of Michigan. And if you're not already on your way, you should probably get on your way pretty soon, especially if you have a ways to go. All the usual Round River Rendezvous things you need to know. You probably should be prepared to camp and be self-sufficient. They'll have a breakfast and dinner kitchen, but you'll need lunch food. It might rain and might very possibly rain hard, so be prepared for all of that. And if you want more information, go to the earthfirstjournal.org newswire, or you can send an email to rrr2016@riseup.net. And not sure exactly where any other information is at this point, but leave your dogs at home. That's probably a thing. And especially if your dog has a camera, don't go anywhere near the Round River Rendezvous. The California Native Plant Society Santa Cruz County Chapter Habitat Restoration Team is having a restoration this Saturday, June 25th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Baldwin Creek in Wilder Ranch State Park. Summertime is here, and this lovely coastal spot is calling us back. Linda writes, I'm sure there will be various weedy mustard species, and we will definitely check out the Cape Ivy sites. Check out the July 11th California Native Plant Society at their webpage, and we'll see you at the Wilder Ranch at 10 a.m. for carpooling up to Baldwin Creek. How do you get there? Take Highway 1 north out or west out of Santa Cruz, depending on which way your compass is pointing, and then continue up the road to the turnoff on the left-hand side for Wilder Ranch. There is a sign indicating a left turn. When you get to the kiosk, tell the ranger that you are volunteering for habitat restoration. They'll give you a parking pass. Meet the group at the interpretive sign by the bathrooms in the parking lot. Please be on time for the carpool at 10 a.m. The Habitat Restoration Team is a volunteer group working to restore native habitat in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. Their program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Please wear comfortable layered clothing. Maybe not so many layers, but then again, it might be foggy. Bring something to drink and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine. It'll probably be mostly shine, but if things get particularly unpleasant, they'll call it a day. Tools are provided. Bring your gloves and water. For more information, contact the program leader. Her number, 831-462-4041. That's 462-4041. You could email her at redwoodrn, that's REDWDRN, at packbell.net, or visit the website at www.cruzcnps.com. .org. Want to make $10,000? Well, there's a reward offered about the wolf pups that were killed in Idaho. The Center for Biological Diversity is pledging $10,000 rewards for information leading to the arrest and conviction of those responsible for illegally killing wolf pups after removing them from their den in North Idaho's Kootenai County, about 15 miles outside the city of Coeur d'Alene. This pledge, along with an undisclosed reward offered by the Idaho Department of Fish and Game, comes as Idaho officials are seeking leads in their criminal investigation of the poaching, which likely occurred in the week of May 16th. Officials noted, pulling young wolf pups from their den and killing them is repulsive, said Center Attorney Andrea Santarciere. Coming on the heels of a protected grizzly bear being killed last month, it's a stark reminder that Idaho's still recovering populations of big carnivores are under constant threat from poachers. Fish and game officers are asking anyone with information about the wolf pup killing incident to call Citizens Against Poaching Hotline 800-632-5999. That's 800-632-5999. Callers have the opportunity to remain anonymous. And a lockdown blockade against Mendocino Redwood Company in this story from the Earth First Newswire. Activists Wednesday blocked trucks and vehicles transporting logging crews in a protest against Mendocino Redwood Company. The company uses a practice known as hack and squirt to kill hardwoods on their forest holdings. Protesters call for a lock and block protest at noon at the gates of the MRC Timber Harvest Plan 1-14-148 MEN, nicknamed Halfway to Hell, near the tiny town of Compchi in the heart of southern Mendocino County. On June 7th, a two-thirds majority of voters in Mendocino County passed Measure 5, declaring the practice of leaving dead standing trees a public nuisance. Despite the overwhelming voter mandate, MRC, that's Mendocino Redwood Company, continues the practice of dousing the forest with the chemical imazapyr, leaving thousands of tan oaks and other hardwoods dead but standing, exacerbating an already critical high fire danger by adding dry fuels to the forest during a fifth year of drought in California. We locked down today because MRC is continuing to hack and squirt after the people went to the ballot box and told them to stop. When the normal civil channels don't work, that's when you get civil disobedience and nonviolent direct action, said longtime county resident Laura Anderson. We're putting our bodies on the line to stop this dangerous practice and to expose the MRC's dead-end brand of forestry, she said. A large crowd of supporters carried signs with messages like, poison is bad forestry, Fisher family, go back to the gap. A large banner expressed the group's central demand, reading, MRC, stop hack and squirt now. Longtime forest activist Linda Perkins of Albion explained the Halfway to Hell plan is 580 acres of total decimation. They're taking it down to the nub. The plan includes three silvicultural prescriptions, designated group selection, transition, and variable retention, all forms of even-age management leading to more tan oak growth, more poisoning, and more dead-standing trees, said Perkins. Mendocino Redwood Company is converting the forest to monoculture tree plantations, claiming restoration, but they're actually doing the opposite, taking much too fast, too soon, and reducing diversity. This is bad for the earth as we know it. They should heed the will of the people and or have their Forest Stewardship Council sustainable certification revoked, she concluded. The plan also includes an unknown acreage of previously hacked and squirted hardwoods, which will become dead-standing trees. The company refuses to disclose to the public the locations where it is applying the poisons. Currently, the contractor is only required to report the use of chemicals to the Agriculture Department within 30 days after use. The Mendocino Ag Commissioner has warned about breathing smoke from burning materials treated with imazapyr. The initiative was heavily backed by local volunteer firefighters. Measure 5 is waiting certification after the required 30-day period following the election. Proponents are bracing for an expected lawsuit by Mendocino Redwood Company challenging the law. And this news was brought to you by Save Our Little Lake Valley, Coyote Valley Band of Pomo Indians, Earth First Mendocino, Bay Area Coalition for Headwaters. And you can find more information at www.savelittlelakevalley.org. And we found this at the Earth First Journal's Newswire. And 20 people have been arrested for sowing seeds in Utah's tar sands mine in this story from Rising Tide North America, as found on the Earth First Newswire. 30 people walked into one of the country's first tar sands mines and sowed seeds to regrow land destroyed by tar sands, a fossil fuel more polluting than coal and oil. With butterfly puppets, songs, and banners, protesters trespassed onto the mine site and took the remediation of the stripped land into their own hands with shovels, pickaxes, and seed balls. Evidently displeased with the sowing of native grasses and flowers, law enforcement intervened to arrest 20 of the planters who banded together and sang Until Arrest. The action was planned by the Tavaputs Action Council, a coalition of grassroots social justice groups of the Colorado Plateau, and came as the conclusion to a three-day event dedicated to celebrating land and biodiversity. Over 100 people participated camping on public land next to the tar sands mine and attending workshops, panels, and music shows. People came together to hear about indigenous resistance to fossil fuels and colonialism and to imagine a more equitable future together. Canadian mining company U.S. Oil Sands has leased 32,005 acres of public lands for oil shale development. In the future, 830,000 acres of public land could be at risk of irreversible tar sands strip mining in the western United States. Tar sands requires large quantities of water for processing into crude oil, putting extra pressure on a water system that is already under threat of running dry. Kate Savage, Tavaputs Action Council, by taking action today, we are creating in the present the future we are dreaming of. This means trespassing against U.S. oil sands and other fossil fuel companies that want to make our future unlivable. Raphael Cordray, Tavaputs Action Council, we took action today to tell U.S. oil sands that we are here to stay and will not be intimidated by oppressive law enforcement and corrupt companies. Tar sands spells disaster for people and the planet. Today we said, not in our name. Kim and Nagalbe Inna, we must remember that if we do not fight, we cannot win. We don't even have a chance of winning. By planting seeds, we have a chance of winning another round from Mother Earth. We still have more battles to fight within us. These seeds planted will harvest another generation of fighters and warriors. The boom and bust failures of coal, tar sands, and oil shale show that we cannot rely on the fossil fuel industry to provide long-term jobs and steady economies. We are demanding a just transition away from subsidizing dirty energy and towards a stable and sustainable way of living, said Moab resident and CCRT member Melissa Graciosa. This is an enormous task, and yet people all over the world are rising to the occasion. We need policies and institutions to support a just transition, and we are building the people power to make it happen. According to Will Munger, all across the region, people are facing a similar situation. Take, for example, the recent bankruptcy of Peabody Coal. They must be held accountable for the destruction of indigenous lands on Black Mesa, and we must ensure that the CEOs don't bail with bonuses while workers and local communities suffer. We must take the money generated by the fossil fuel industry to repair the land and water while supporting local communities' transitions away from fossil fuel-dependent economies. The Tavaputs Action Council supporting the reclamation action, including Canyons Country Rising Tide, Peaceful Uprising, Utah Tar Sands Resistance, Climate Disobedience Center, and Wasatch Rising Tide. And we found this story at the Earth First Journal Newswire. And here in California, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife has busted a suspected sturgeon poachers. The Sacramento County District Attorney has filed charges. Six Sacramento residents have been charged with multiple Fish and Game Code violations after California Department of Fish and Wildlife officers conducted a multi-week investigation of a sturgeon poaching operation. The Sacramento County District Attorney Office will pursue a case against Sacramento residents Mikhail Tavrkadabov, 54, Alexander Posnov, 48, Sang Sefan, 29, Narang Srikam, 35, Mike Koprasut, 46, and Rungurji Spitula, or Shrutula, 48. The six men face charges including conspiracy to unlawfully take sturgeon, take in possession of a sturgeon for commercial purposes, unlawful possession of sturgeon, possession of untagged and oversized sturgeon, and a failure to properly return and report sturgeon fishing cards. Extensive evidence of illegal activities was uncovered by wildlife officers as they served search warrants at multiple locations where the suspected members of the group ran their poaching operation. At one location, officers found an oversized, untagged sturgeon that was barely alive and lay flopping on the floor of a garage. The fish could not be saved. Officers also found more than 20 jars of caviar, some labeled with prices, weights and sturgeon meat labeled with prices, and fish processing equipment, including scales and canning equipment. Officers seized fishing rods and tackle, along with various CDFW licenses and tags and other tools and evidence of illegal poaching activities. If convicted, the six suspects could face several thousand dollars in fines and penalties, incarceration, forfeiture of assets and equipment, and revocation of future fishing privileges. Two types of sturgeon, white and green, are native to the anadromous waterways of California. White sturgeon, which was taken in this case, is highly sought after for its meat and roe. This creates a commercial black market that leads to rampant poaching of the species. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife spends significant resources on equipment and personnel hours to combat sturgeon poaching and protect this iconic species of California's Central Valley. Illegal trafficking of wildlife is a multi-million dollar black market industry often linked to criminal organizations, said David Bess, chief of CDFW's Law Enforcement Division. Wildlife trafficking threatens the stability of species, the economy, and public safety, not only in California, but globally. Anyone with information about unlawful fishing, hunting, or pollution is encouraged to contact the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's Cal Tip Line, a confidential secret witness program that encourages the public to provide wildlife officers with factual information leading to the arrest of poachers and polluters. The Cal Tip Line in California is 888-334-2258. That's 888-334-2258. And you can find out more information at the website www.wildlife.ca.gov. And in Chile's forests, shadowy rebel groups threaten the logging industry. In this story by Graham Slattery, editing by Rosalba O'Brien, Christian Plum, and Stuart Grudnick, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. A few moments of relaxation for Chilean logger Nelson Hidalgo were shattered one day last month when 12 armed men piled out of a pickup truck and demanded he step outside his worksite dining trailer. At rifle point, the masked men forced Hidalgo and a handful of colleagues to the ground, according to the workers' account. Over the next hour, the armed men burnt the minibus, an excavator, and other equipment belonging to Neil Yumar Forestry, Hidalgo's employer and a subcontractor for Chilean lumber giant Celulosa Arauco. As they left, the men scattered leaflets claiming allegiance to Chile's indigenous Mapuche people, many of whom assert that logging companies are trespassing on their territory and draining the natural resources that are their birthright. No one was injured at the action, but Nylamar estimates the losses that afternoon came to $600,000 and the company's workers were shaken. Since then, I've been tense. My muscles are in pain as if they've been shrinking, the gruff middle-aged Hidalgo said. Such experiences have been multiplying lately. Industry and government data show and weighing on the Chilean logging, the country's second largest industry after copper mining. Mostly focused in southern Chile, it is the source of 10% of the country's exports. 25 attacks by saboteurs claiming to represent Chile's Mapuche were registered in the first 5 months of 2016 by Forestry Subcontractors Union Agroforeg. That resulted in an estimated 9 billion pesos, about $13.5 million in damage, up from 3 billion pesos in all of 2015 and 638 million pesos in 2014, according to the union. Latin America's two largest forestry firms, Empresa CMPC and Empresa Copec subsidiary Arauco, have been among the worst affected. Behind the attacks, according to politicians and law enforcement authorities, are two small, mysterious groups who say they want an autonomous Mapuche state. They are becoming increasingly well-organized and sophisticated in their tactics, law enforcement, loggers, and politicians say. The groups complain that the logging industry's introduction of water-hungry radiata pine and eucalyptus trees since the 1980s has damaged the ecosystem. In the southern Araucanía region, the percentage of land use now used for forest plantations has risen to almost 20% of all surface area. Academics say agriculture has become more difficult as plantations have dried up the land. According to many government measures, the towns in the most heavily logged zones are the poorest in the nation. Before, we had many water resources and natural spaces that were the center of our cultural lifeblood, our food and our spirituality and our strength, said Jose Osvaldo Miliano, a Mapuche leader, while sitting in a traditional wooden raca hut. But today, the forestry companies have destroyed it. Around 600,000 Mapuche live in southern Chile, concentrated in Araucanía and Biobío, lush and hilly provinces roughly 400 miles south of the nation's capital, Santiago. Ever since the Chilean army invaded the Mapuche territory in a brutal campaign in the late 1800s, relations with the state have been fractious. When timber companies began replacing native forest with industrial plantations in the 1980s, some Mapuche fought back, setting plantations, trucks, and machinery ablaze. But such occasional incidents were not a major operational threat to companies. That has changed in the last 18 months as attacks have accelerated. Chile's Southern Trucking Union said damage from trucks that were hijacked and destroyed rose to $2 million in January and February of 2016, up from $500,000 for the same period last year. A high-ranking CMPC manager who asked not to be identified as he is not authorized to speak to the media said 4 billion pesos worth of its subcontractors' equipment had been burnt in 19 attacks between January and May of 2016. That was up from 16 attacks in all of 2015. The recent spate of violence has been attributed to two key groups with perhaps as few as 60 members, calling themselves the Coordinadora Aruco Mayeco. They have recently formed Waichan Auka Mapu, Fight of the Rebel Territory, and the Mapu Dungun Tung. They have claimed responsibility for dozens of the recent attacks, but there have been few successful convictions and questions remain about their identity. They're obviously working for the Earth. And an auctioneer gets a year in prison for ivory and rhino horn smuggling in this story by Brendan Pearson and Nate Raymond, editing by Bernard Orr of World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. An executive with a Beverly Hills gallery and auction house was sentenced on Wednesday to 1 year and 1 day in prison after admitting that he conspired to smuggle at least $1 million in animal products that included a rhino horn and elephant ivory. Joseph Chait, 38, a senior auction administrator for his family's business, I Am Chait Gallery Auctioneers, was sentenced by U.S. District Judge Paul Oatkin in Manhattan after pleading guilty in March to conspiring to smuggle wildlife products. His attorney, Judith Germano, had asked the judge for a sentence of community service. She said that Chait risked being cut off from his family, which raised him in the Church of Scientology, by cooperating with prosecutors. "My actions were wrong, and I regret them every single day," Chait said before being sentenced. He also said that in a weird way he was grateful for the criminal case because it has allowed me to break the chains of my upbringing. Prosecutors said Chase falsified customs forms stating ivory and rhino horn were made of bone, wood, or plastic. After a rhino carving sold at auction for $230,000, Chait made false documents putting the value at $108.75, saying the object was made of plastic, prosecutors said. He and others also sold ivory carvings to a Chinese dealer and provided them to that dealer's courier even after learning the buyer had been arrested in China for smuggling ivory purchased from Chait's auction house, prosecutors said. The case comes as conservationists and law enforcement officials in the United States and globally have been trying to crack down on the illegal trade in products from the two threatened species. U.S. authorities said rhino horn-made libation cups and ornamental carvings made from ivory are particularly in demand in Asia, namely China and Hong Kong. The result is a thriving black market. Most species of rhinoceros are extinct or on the brink of extinction as a result, and elephants are under threat in many countries. This case is not the first to involve the I Am Chait auction house. Actor Nicolas Cage in December agreed to turn over a rare stolen dinosaur skull he bought from I Am Chait after U.S. authorities filed a civil forfeiture complaint seeking to take possession of the item so it could be repatriated to Mongolia. Neither Cage nor the gallery was accused of wrongdoing in that affair. And a Brussels has stepped up efforts to halt Poland's logging plan in a primeval forest in this story by Barbara Lewis and Agnieszka Bartaczeko, editing by Raisa Kosolowski, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. The European Union executive on Thursday stepped up efforts to stop Poland from its planned increase in logging in Europe's last primeval forest, adding to bad blood between Brussels and Warsaw. The Białowieża Forest is a UNESCO World Heritage Site that sprawls across the border between Poland and Belarus and is home to rare European wood bison and many other species, but only a sixth of the forest is protected. In March, the Polish government approved a tripling in the volume of wood to be harvested and a third of the unprotected forest, prompting the European Commission to send officials to inspect. European Commission spokesman Enrico Brivio said Thursday, announced a formal infringement procedure over the possible breach of EU environmental law in Poland's logging plan. He said the commission was in contact with the Polish authorities, which have a month to provide the information the regulators have requested. Once that is received, the commission will decide on the next steps that could ultimately lead to court action and fines. Starting legal proceedings shows the commission agrees that the Polish government violated the law when it decided to increase logging in Białowieża. Agata Frunk, a lawyer at the non-governmental organization Client Earth, said, logging is part of a wider political standoff between Warsaw and Brussels. Since winning elections last year, Poland's conservative government has clashed with EU regulators over a range of issues, including freedom of speech and democracy, as well as energy and environmental issues. As a nation heavily dependent and reliant on coal, the most carbon-intensive fossil fuel, Poland has for years struggled to accept EU climate policy on lowering greenhouse gas emissions. Poland has argued that the logging expansion is a necessary measure to combat an infestation of bark beetles in the area. Scientists dispute that claim, saying such outbreaks are part of the natural processes that shape the forest. A spokesperson for the Polish Environment Minister said he was waiting to receive documents from the Commission. For the time being, it is difficult for us to provide detailed comment. We will continue our dialogue with the Commission, he said. In Poland, the debate about logging in the Białowieża forest has been fierce. Poles have become increasingly divided by the government's policies, both at home and abroad, some drawing large protests in Warsaw and other major cities. UNESCO last week drafted an opinion voicing concern about the forest's future. The UN body will in July decide whether it needs to officially list the forest as in danger. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM and streaming live at www.freakradio.org. If you want to hear a rebroadcast, please tune in tomorrow afternoon. That's Friday at 3 p.m. If you're in the Moscow, Idaho area, tune in to KRFP, Radio Free Moscow, broadcasting at 90.3 FM, to hear the Earth First Update at 3 p.m. on Wednesdays. On the Internet, tune in to Truth and Justice, or excuse me, in Boston, tune in to Truth and Justice Radio, WZBC in Boston, transmitting at 90.3 FM, and you can hear the Earth First Update sometime between 6 and 10 a.m. on Sundays. And on the Internet, tune in to Grateful Dread Public Radio. That's gdprnashville.org. Once again, gdprnashville.org, Sundays at 2 a.m. And you can also hear them on TuneIn and Spotify. And you can always go to radio4all.net. That's radio with the number 4all.net, where you can listen online or download this or previous Earth First updates from the voluminous archives contained therein. And if you can support Radio for All, please do. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download and broadcast. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced at the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening, and please tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.